Hey, everybody, it's Kathy Lee Gifford, and I'm so excited that my new podcast, Kathy Lee and Company, is here. It's happening. And I have a cavalcade of friends who are going to be joining me, including my very first guest, the inimitable Regis Philbin. That's right.
A podcast? I don't have a computer. I don't have a tweeter. I have nothing.
A tweeter?
What are we doing here? A podcast?
Time to enter the 21st century, Reach, all kicking right. And screaming.
It's like old times.
I know!
Huh? Oh my God, all those years together and here we are, reunited for podcast.
On a podcast, Reach, can you imagine what's happened to the world?
You know, I've been calling it a podcast ever since I got up this morning.
Available now.
Available now.
At podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
The following program is a podcastone.com production.
Welcome to Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette. So NSA snooping to protect us from terrorism isn't really all about terrorism after all. To nobody's great surprise, the NSA is hacking everything and snooping on everyone. Both France and Mexico summoned their American ambassadors to express their anger at U.S. surveillance. In France, we learned during 1 4-week period, the NSA recorded more than 70 million phone calls. And that's not so-called metadata. These are actual recorded and collected calls. Some of the targets were included simply because they were people in politics or in business or in the bureaucracy. In Mexico, the NSA has been caught spying on private economic communications and actually intercepted 85,000 text messages sent by President Peña Nieto and his close associates. And speaking of business spying, Brazil's president canceled an October state visit and a White House dinner after discovering the NSA was spying on her personal communications as well as industrial spying on Brazil's oil giant Petrobras. We'll talk about it with Ron Paul right after this.
This is Ron Paul. Thanks to our sponsors for making these podcasts available to you.
Have a website for your business? Great. But now what? With 95% of consumers now turning to the internet before making purchases, simply having a website is no longer enough if it's not being found in search results. But online marketing can be confusing, and simply put, it's hard to do it all and do it well. ESIOH.com, pronounced SEO, is making it easy and affordable for small businesses to be found when potential customers search Google, Bing, and Yahoo. ESIOH.com has made it their mission to provide online marketing that will help grow your business's online presence by getting your website in front of as many interested searchers as possible. Never outsourced, all of their work is done in their California office and is 100% compliant with Google Webmaster Guidelines, which means the methods they use to improve your online presence today will in no way penalize your website in the future. No contracts, commitments, or setup fees either. Simply $599 a month. 30-day, no questions asked, 100% money-back guarantee. Try them out for a month, and if it's not what you expect or you change your mind, they'll give you your money back. They are that sure they'll exceed your expectations. You will not find a company that works harder to increase your online presence. So go to ESIOH.com now and tell them you heard about them on the Ron Paul Podcast.
Thank you, Charles.
Dr. Paul, I only wish the American people were as indignant about the state's unconstitutional snooping on them as some of these foreign governments are. If the French can call in the American ambassador, put him on the carpet, the American people should be giving their representatives an earful too, shouldn't they?
Yeah, you'd think maybe the congressman should represent them and raise a little cane, but there's a few who are concerned, but they're really not speaking out. So it is rather sad. You know, many, many years ago, a relative of a relative was in the State Department that I knew well, and he was working in an embassy overseas, and he confidentially relayed to me some stories that these embassies, our embassies overseas, are totally infiltrated with the CIA. And also the connection, he was convinced that the CIA with business interests was very, very powerful. So it's probably nothing new. I'll bet you the business espionage is one of the big deals. You know, when they look at in Brazil, it was involved with their oil companies, and Mexico has oil. And you'd wonder why they need this so badly to get this information. But I think what happens is there are people who have ulterior motives all the time to make use of government for all nefarious reasons. And they're looking for events as excuses, but not reasons. So 9/11, in many ways, was an excuse for doing a lot of what's happening today. The Patriot Act, for instance, was written a long time, you know, before 9/11, but there was no incentive. The people weren't frightened. The people weren't concerned. They weren't willing to give up more of the liberties. The congressman didn't feel compelled, you know, to pass the bill. But in the 9/11, all of a sudden, the people said, oh, we have to give up some of our freedom for our safety and security. So they're always looking for excuses. And 9/11 was the big one, but the continuous global war on terrorism, which is continuous war, is what they use to justify this continual spying, pretending that they're making us safe. But it's making us weaker. It's making us poorer. It gives, it creates more enemies, and it undermines our credibility. Just think of, you know, in the old days, we never deserved as much credit as we got, but certainly more than we have now. Because in the old days, we as a country were seen as coming to the rescue of the world who was threatened, you know, by tyrants like communism and Hitler and all these things. And we were generally on the moral high ground, at least as it was perceived. And even in the Arab countries in the Middle East, even though we've supported Israel for a long time, we always have maintained credibility, you know, with the Arab nations. Yet that is changing, not only with individuals, say, in the Middle East, but what about these other countries? What about now our allies? You know, in the Middle East, that's supposed to be our enemies. You know, they're part of Al-Qaeda, and we have to watch those Muslims, and they use that as an excuse. But now this is really a much broader base of individuals, countries that we have, you know, broken relationships, essentially, when it comes to France and Mexico and Brazil. So we're not treating our allies very well. And I don't know who it was in the administration, but somebody was quoted. It could have been the president. Well, everybody spies, which is probably true. But I don't think anybody has ever had an operation like this because the technology was never available. And all you have to do is look at that facility in Utah and see how huge it is. How can they contain so much information? And it's not just on potential terrorists. It's even on the individual accounts of the leaders in this country. So if we were looking to undermine our relationships with just about everybody in the world, we're doing a very, very good job. So you wonder, what's the answer? Are these people stupid that run this program? Or is there an ulterior motive? Or just what is going on? I have trouble understanding their ulterior motives that they would design this to make us look so bad. I think they lack judgment, and maybe the ultimate goal is to have one world government, but they want to make sure those in our country, the neoconservatives, that they get to run the one world government. They're not quite saying, oh, we'll have one world government under any circumstance and let everybody participate. I don't think that's what's going on here, because right now we are the powerhouse of the world so far. We have still the most money and the most wealth, and we still have the most weapons, which is a big deal. We still have the reserve currency. But what I think the world is sensing, certainly our country is sensing it, is that that's coming to an end. Our economy is not as strong. We are not as wealthy as we thought. We have this tremendous amount of debt. And this is important, the fact that these countries are speaking out against this before they would just swallow it and go by. Just think about it. A few years ago under George Bush Sr., you know, we first paid Noriega to be our buddy, you know, down in Panama, and he was involved in drug trades, and we used the money, and it was just really bad. But then we get tired of him because he gets a little bit too independent. So we go and arrest him, you know, and pretend that we are the king of the world, and we can do this, march into a country and change leaders. I think back then we never heard much. But I think every time we do that to a country, whether it's in the countries in the Middle East, whether it's in Eastern Europe, or whether it's the way we're treating Russia right now, or whether it's Central America, I think this stuff builds up. And I sense that when the day comes when we are truly bankrupt and the dollar is not the king of the hill and the reserve currency of the world, the changes will be rather dramatic. And it's going to be something that we won't ease into a bad situation, we'll collapse into a bad situation. And I think this is seen with the type of arguments are going on in Washington, whether it's on foreign policy, whether it has to do with Syria, or whether it has to do with more medical care controlled by the government. We're at an impasse, and it's because the people in Washington, our politicians, are just not willing to either acknowledge it. They don't understand it, but they certainly don't want to say that this country can't afford this type of a foreign policy, and they can't afford this type of an economic monetary policy. And certainly the American people hopefully will wake up and say, well, we can't afford to have our liberties continue to be eroded. And they're doing spying. Actually, what Snowden did was he revealed the spying on American citizens first. And now what is following is that we spy on everybody. So and all the Americans and the United States as a whole will suffer from this. But we need to prepare ourselves for this and have a major change in policy. And for me, a major change in policy isn't getting rid of Obama and putting in some Republican who does the same thing and just tones down, medical care that the government provides and try to hold things together and pretend they're going to borrow a little less money. That's not going to work. We have to have a major discussion on what we think the role of government ought to be. And not only do I think that we had a good start at the beginning of this country, I think we have a lot of opportunity to make it even a lot better, because I think we have, you know, a better understanding of current events. I think large governments have been known to fail. Communism fails. Socialism fails. Keynesianism fails. Paper money is failing. So I think we can start talking about a system of government where the people truly become more independent of government, and that the people not grant to their governments so much power. So that's what I'm hopeful for. And so when these stories break and find out how much we're involved, I try to look at this as a positive to wake the people up. And quite frankly, I think we're indebted to Edward Snowden for this. There's always just a few whistleblowers out there. But because our problems were so great, I would say that he's probably the greatest whistleblower, because he has released so much information. It's so timely and so important. I just hope the American people realize this. And I think the trend is okay. I think there's less people now saying that he is a traitor and he's not a good American. He's getting actually, I think, a little more sympathy than certainly Daniel Ellsberg got in the 1970s. He got essentially nothing. So hopefully this bad news, we can turn around and make it good news and make people think about what kind of policies could be implemented that would restore some decency to America.
Well, the national surveillance state is like any other government program. Once it's been created and set in motion, it takes on a life of its own, and it grows endlessly. Does anybody in Washington really know what's going on, what they're really doing? President Obama apologized to Mexico, saying, I didn't authorize the surveillance of anybody there. We'll talk about that when we continue in a moment.
How would you like to do something that's good for you and good for America? From now on, when you're going to shop on Amazon, go to the podcast1.com Ron Paul page and click on the Amazon link there. When you do, a portion of whatever you buy gets kicked back to the Ron Paul show to help keep the podcast coming and keep us from having to run tons and tons of ads, so we can be selective and focus on getting you Ron's message. So do it. Go to podcast1.com, click on the Ron Paul page, click on the Amazon link. You'll be glad you did.
Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. Dr. Paul, a lot of us who have worried and questioned the rogue behavior of the surveillance state have heard in reply, the answer that we've gotten is, don't worry, everything is under strict congressional oversight. But the people that are supposed to be the overseers, like, well, Mike Rogers, House Intelligence Chairman, have demonstrated they are utterly clueless about what is going on with the NSA. So where's all the much-vaunted oversight?
Well, there really isn't any. Now, Rogers comes across as very clueless, but the other answer could be that he's just a hack there to protect the system, believes everything that's going on, and loves it. He was part of it in the FBI. So he's clueless if he thinks what he is doing and what he supports, and he doesn't want to really investigate NSA. He doesn't have much concern for America. So it's a mixed bag. I always have trouble figuring out, motivations, but we can evaluate policies, and they're so unwise, and they come across as totally clueless because it certainly doesn't help us. And it's just so hard for me to believe that individuals that live in this country want to be on purpose destroy our country, and that's what they're doing. So philosophically, they're clueless. Technically, they sort of know what's going on, but they believe that this is necessary. You know, this whole argument about if we don't have anything to hide, why worry about it? Oh yeah, we have to give up a little bit of freedom to be safe. Well, whoever said the government's sole purpose was to make us safe? That's not the purpose of government. The purpose of government is to make us free, protect our liberties. And we're responsible, to make ourselves safe one way or the other, and other methods other than having 100,000 federal bureaucrats with guns making us safe. So that whole philosophy is wrong. And that is where they're clueless. They don't know what's going on, economically speaking, and they've certainly have given up on a non-interventionist foreign policy. So hopefully, American people will wake up. And, of course, I get encouragement because when I talk to a lot of young people on college campuses, they seem to be very receptive to the views that I've been expressing.
Well, thank you, Dr. Paul. We appreciate it. Another great conversation, another great podcast. Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.